Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thank you, Kim. John Williams here, 108. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Are you?
If Harris thinks that he can just coast through this month and still graduate, he is sorely mistaken.
I have no reservation whatsoever
about holding him back another year.
A little graduation talk to start the show. Mayor Emanuel has some interesting ideas about this. We'll talk about that in this half hour. And then in the 2 o'clock hour, we will swing over to the conversation about what happened with Kendall Jenner's Pepsi ad. So Elif and I watched the ad before we came into the studio. We posted all 2 minutes of it. There's that version from YouTube on my Facebook page. I'm King John on Facebook, and you can see it there. It's really a beautiful ad, of course. It's a Pepsi ad, and it's got Kendall Jenner in there. And the most sort of heterogeneous, beautiful Black Lives Matter protest you've ever seen. And there's a moment where Kendall says, when she sort of crosses the line, there's the policemen all standing there, tough in their blue, not letting people pass a certain line. And then there's all the protesters chanting on the other side. And Kendall leaves the group of protesters that she's now joined and hands an ice cold Pepsi to the officer. And he takes a sip. And that is the best news Black Lives Matter has ever heard. So now they're all going bananas because he's drinking the Pepsi, which is a sad commentary for Black Lives Matter. If the only progress you've made is that Kendall Jackson can get one of the cops to drink a soda, frankly, you haven't made much progress. But then he takes a sip of it, and then he kind of looks at some of the officers and he says, you know what, this Pepsi stuff is pretty good. He says that with a look, but that's what he says. And then they are perhaps all now, I'm not sure what the end of that sentence is. They're all now probably going to beat this cop up later on. But anyway, they're all something. And then the ad ends, and it's sort of like I Want to Teach the World to Sing, that old ad, in perfect harmony, except that the stakes have changed, and it's kind of a confused message. But really, it's an ad for soda. And maybe the mistake is to try and read too much into it. Or the mistake is, don't even go there, Pepsi. Are you kidding me? All right, your thoughts about that. We'll play the song for you from it, which is positively lovely, and get your opinion at 2:30. It's 1:11. In the meantime, you can do your homework by looking at it right now on my Facebook page. Speaking of homework, the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, wants to require Chicago public school students to get letters of acceptance from 2 or 4 year colleges, the armed forces, or some sort of certified trade program. You have to be an apprentice to be a carpenter or an electrician in order to get your high school diploma. You will not graduate Chicago High School if you don't have a certified plan vis-a-vis this letter to do something else in your life. Just graduating 12th grade is not going to be good enough anymore. The city of Chicago is so going to look down its nose on that that they won't even give you your diploma if all you're going to do is get a 12th grade education. And I'm wondering what you think about this. My number is 312-981-7200. The mayor said, just like you do with your children, college, post-high school, it's what's expected. If you change the expectation, it's not hard for the kids to adapt. If you tell your kids, hey, you are not going to graduate high school if you don't, and they're only starting this with the freshman class this year, so they're not going to spring this on the juniors or seniors. But the freshmen now know, they've been served notice. No diploma unless you have a plan, literally a letter of acceptance from a 4-year school, a 2-year school, one of the academies, or, well, not one of the academies. You've been accepted into the Army or Air Force or whatever, or trade school. Times have changed, right? I mean, once upon a time, say you graduate, and so now I'm thinking of all the instances, right, where there's a flaw in this. Like maybe your family runs a pizza joint, and after high school graduation, you want to work in the family pizza joint and run the pizza joint. You don't have to have a high school degree to do that, or a college diploma. You don't need to have served in the Marines. You can do that. Maybe you should be able to do that. But I'm not sure if this exercise of all of the balloons I can popping, the mayor's bouquet there are worth popping, because in general what he's got is a good idea. Of course you should have a plan. And yeah, we should embrace and encourage that. That's the real takeaway here.
I'm going to start a business of writing plans for $75 a piece, so I think I'll start on the north side at some high schools.
Don't poo-poo this.
I know. I'm just thinking it's an opportunity right there.
You're talking about bogus plans.
No,
I'm talking about real plans. You have to have applied to Joliet Junior College, and they have to have accepted you. By the way, the mayor also says that if you get a B average, city schools will be free. I'm not sure that's perfect. But again, here I am popping all of the balloons in his balloon, you know, bouquet. I think if you're getting a C or above, frankly, I think if you're passing, you know, because think about it. Who really needs a college diploma? Who needs to continue to work in education and better themselves academically? It's those average students. You know, if you're struggling, we're going to kick you out. Well, the B and A students, we don't have to worry about them. They'll be fine. It is, in fact, the C and D students that we need to keep in school. Don't let them get frustrated and quit. So when I get to be king, you will get free education up to the 16th grade if you are above a D. If you are a C minus or above, I'll be happy to pay for you, particularly if you stay in one of our schools. One last note about that before we pick up some phone lines. And that is that that whole experience of going to a Chicago City College or a Chicago public school would be greatly improved for everybody if people like me, you know, who have resources and sent my kid to a good suburban high school, and then he went to a good, one went to a good public school and one went to a good private school. If we would put our kids in these other schools in the city, then everybody would win. But in that case, you're using your kid as kind of a trial balloon, and you don't want to do that with your kid. You want the mayor to do that with his. You want everybody else's kids to go to the Chicago City Colleges and the Chicago public schools.
Did you hear the story about Wendy Catton?
Oh, yeah, in our news just a minute ago, right?
Did Kim do it? She founded this parents group called Raise Your Hand, Parents Advocacy Group for CPS students.
Now, maybe I'm confused. Keep going,
okay.
Steve.
So she started this group, and, you know, they were tough. They looked at CPS. They called them out. They did some things. She is resigning now so she can move to Evanston where her son can go to high school.
That is the story, yeah.
Yeah.
What a sad commentary.
She said it was a grueling decision.
Yeah. This is why I think that the mayor's kids, the governor's kids, you know, I think they should all be in district and their kids should go to those schools. I know that may not be fair to those kids, but your mom or dad didn't have to run for mayor either. They didn't ask for my opinion on that, and there's no sense in opening up that wound.
And I think they're not going to probably in the near future.
Well, what do you think of the, Steve, the idea that you have to have a letter, some sort of, you know, acceptance to one of the armed forces, a college or a trade school, in order to get your high school diploma?
Well, I think what he's, and you said it, right? He's trying to instill that there's something next. So what's next? It doesn't end with a senior diploma.
Yeah.
Right? So.
Yeah, 12th grade is really arbitrary anymore. I mean, that's, if the mayor's right, and I think he kind of is, you know, it's so easy to sound like you're passing judgment on people who don't have the financial or mental resources to graduate from junior college or senior college. I don't mean to be that at all. But the truth is, a high school diploma just isn't good enough these days. That's why I think we say that with one breath, but then we don't help those people pay for that college. We walk you all the way up to 12th grade and say, now, the most important moment in your life is that you go on to school, and by the way, now we're not going to help you. Well, what's the point of that? Why did we do that to them? We have free public education in this country all the way up to 12th grade, and then we say, but the one that really matters is 13th grade, and we're not going to get you there. You could get them there. Why is 12 so magical? It could be 13. We'll start with Christine. You're on WGN. Hey, Christine, what do you want to say? Hi.
Hi, John. My daughter is a freshman, or will be a freshman next year in Chicago Public Schools at a selective enrollment high school. You know, it's entirely possible that she may want to take a gap year.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe she doesn't, you know, she doesn't want or need to go to college right away.
The Obama kids were going to do that, right?
Yeah. And you know, by the way, as a side note, Roner Reiner famously tried to jiggle his daughter's way into one of the selective enrollment high schools in Chicago, but that's another story.
That's another story.
You probably can look it up. But I don't think that's the right way for every kid. To be fair, most of the kids in Chicago public schools are not my child, are not the cut of kids who are in the selective enrollment situations. And you've been away for a while, and you may not know all the ins and outs and the crap that goes on. I think every day about pulling up my stakes in my nice little house and going someplace else. Honest to God, I do. But she's in a good school. She's got her own issues, and this particular school has resources to help students find their path and find a way to college or to whatever's next. And they put that in. There's a college and career center in the school, for the love of God. And it's staffed. We're lucky. Most kids in CPS probably aren't that.
Well, what
lucky.
Are you telling me, that this is an unrealistic expectation by the mayor then?
I think it's bread and circus. I think it's another thing that he's announcing that he's doing, and there's no bucks behind it.
Well, that's true. It's not clear how he's actually going to enforce this. In fact, I'm not sure he has the legal ability to do this.
Exactly. But yeah. I don't think that I think that this is a barrier or a sleeve for some kids that just they don't need that. They don't need to be going to college right away.
Well, okay, fine. But I mean, they do need to go to college. I mean, a kid that takes a gap year is different than what we're talking about. We're talking about kids.
Go ahead.
No.
We're talking about kids what?
Well, I mean, to me, a gap year kid is a kid who does have a plan. The mayor is talking about kids who just aimlessly get their way through high school, and then they don't know what they're going to do. And he said, that's not good enough anymore. You will not graduate from high school if you don't have a plan. What's your plan? If nothing else, go to one of the city schools. Get a B average. We'll pay for it. Or go to a suburban junior college, but you've got to have a plan.
I'm all for that. Who's going to help them make that plan?
Yeah, well, that's a good point. Thanks for the phone call. It's 120. More of your calls next on WGN.
Did you see Jarrett today?
I did not.
Oh, you missed him. He was around.
Was he saying hi?
He was asking about you.
But he was not. If you're looking for a new window, you owe it to yourself to look at Gilkey Windows. Beautiful, energy-efficient windows, custom manufactured, professionally installed. Call now and save $150 per window and $300 per sliding patio door. Call Gilkey at 888-3-GILKEY. You know what I think it is? They're so used to saying evening news, and then they go, hey, we're doing one at 4. So evening news is just the other news.
Well, they've got an afternoon news. They've got one at noon and 1, I think.
Yeah,
so they want to,
pair
it with the evening news.
But it's not.
It's the beginning of the evening news.
4 o'clock is not in the evening. Call Gilkey at 888-3-GILKEY. That's 888-3-GILKEY. Or you can visit them at gilkey.com. Call Gilkey now and find out why for over 38 years people have been saying, I love my Gilkey windows. It's 125. Put that over there. Probably best I don't look at it. It seems to be distracting me. Let's talk to, let's see, where do we go to next, Elif? All our lines are busy. I think Holly's been holding the longest. You're on WGN. Hi, Holly. What can we do for you?
Hi. Well, I was calling in because I heard the part of the what you were talking about with the college being free, and they have a new program that just started. It just started with incoming freshmen of high school last year for Harper College. If you're in the district, they have an opportunity for kids to earn free tuition for up to 2 years, as long as they meet certain criteria going into Harper College. And they have to meet the criteria, and all 4 years in high school, they have to sign up for the program as freshmen. But the criteria are fairly, what I would think is not too difficult to meet.
Right.
The first criteria is a grade point average. It's just like a middle B.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a 2.2, so you have to get a few B's in there, but mostly C's you can get and still meet it. I think it was no F's your senior year. Stop laughing.
No, but we know how that happens. It's so hard that last year.
And then there's an attendance criteria, which it's underwritten partially by local businesses and big local businesses, where there's an attendance criteria because the local businesses are finding that the young kids have no grasp of showing up for work. They have no grasp of the need to just no call, no show.
Oh, I see. Showing up for work, and businesses don't want to underwrite kids who have no interest in someday attending their job. So
right. So it's like, you know, show up for school, you're likely to show up for work.
Huh.
So there's this attendance criteria, which I think is you can't have more than 7 absences in a year, barring unforeseen circumstances.
Yeah, right.
Situations. And then there's a community service aspect of it. You have to do your first year 5 hours of community services that's documented, and then I think the rest of the years are 10. And you meet those criteria, and you can get free tuition for up to 2 years at Harper College.
Well, I like the sound of that, Holly, don't you?
I signed my daughter up for the program. I don't know if she'll go to Harper College, but, you know, if she does, she has that option, and it won't cost me any tuition, which is fabulous.
Yeah, boy, that's great news. Holly, thanks for the phone call. That's a tough one, too, though, because your kid graduates from high school. She's done all these things. Maybe, though, she wants to go to the U of I. And you've got 2 years on the table already paid for. I mean, that's like when your kid decides to go to a state school out of state. They want to go to Wisconsin or Iowa or Michigan, which is fine, but they will pay out-of-state tuition for some of those schools. And you think, hey, Bucky, assuming your kid's name is Bucky.
Or he wants to go to Wisconsin.
Didn't I say Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Why are you saying that
Bucky.
Again then?
Yeah. Bucky the Badger.
Oh, I got it. Sure. Hey, Bucky the Badger. Funny that works out. I was just throwing that in there to be fun. But that's a tough conversation if the kid doesn't want to go to
right. So
school.
Maybe we have to redefine high school to go to make that 15 and 16. Nah, that wouldn't work.
Yeah. I'm going to go to Rosemary on line one. Hey, Rosemary, this is John. What did you want to say? Hi.
Well, I might be a little off the subject, but I do want to say that I was a teacher in Chicago from 1965 until 1994. I took an early retirement, and now I went back to subbing. And I have to say that the schools that I go to are so much improved in every way.
Chicago Public Schools.
Yes, all Chicago Public Schools.
I'm glad to hear
the
you say
students
that.
Students are much more serious. They have IB programs. They have different programs. And I credit Mr. Rahm Emanuel with this because in all the years that I taught, they wouldn't so much as paint the walls. And now he jumped in here. He elongated the school day. As teachers, we all said, oh, that's stupid. We don't like that. But you know what? It's made a very big difference.
How about
that? He's the only one. He's the only public official. And they all use education as their the first plank in their platform. But they do nothing.
And he did. Rosemary, thank you for the call. Dee wanted to say something, too. I'm going to let you jump in here. Dee, you're on the air. What did you want to say?
Hi, John. How are you this afternoon?
Good. What's your thought?
So my thought is that every time we have a conversation about children in, you know, middle school, going into high school is college. You know, where are you going to go to college? What are you going to do when you go to college? And every kid's cut out for college. What happened to vocational school? Remember old Washburn Trade School?
Yeah.
We need people and young people to be able to be carpenters for the future, electricians, plumbers.
I'll bet the average electrician makes more than the average, I don't know, liberal arts major. It'd be close.
And
I'm not sure.
And these are jobs. These are really good, solid jobs that we still need for the future, as well as, you know, brain scientists and what happened to having that conversation with our children and recognizing those skills.
Yeah, that's a good point. I appreciate your call, Dee. Thanks for getting in. This is the background song in that.
Some said never, but they never done come. Yeah.
In that Pepsi commercial that the world is talking about, but not able to see now, Pepsi's pulled the ad because of all of the heat they were taking. Kendall Jenner is the one that crosses the line of protesters and sort of bridges the Black Lives Matter people with the cop. And what she does is hands him a soda, and then everybody cheers. And some people think that's sort of belittling the whole backdrop of that conversation. Yeah, they're selling soda. I can see it both ways. What do you need? We'll talk about that after 2:30 here on WGN. I wonder what Amy Dickinson would think about that, the Ask Amy columnist. How are you?
I will tell you. Yeah, I'm great.
Yes.
I'm great.
Nice to see you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
We're here to talk about your book, but talk to me about that ad. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have seen the ad.
What's your reaction to that?
My reaction to the ad was a lot like of other people's, in that you have this media celebrity who has, you know, doesn't have like a real job. I know she works hard, but and she wasn't broaching the Black Lives. She's appropriating it.
Yeah.
And I saw somebody on social media posted a photo of a police officer pushing up against Martin Luther King. So you contrast the Pepsi ad with the real world.
What it was really like.
What it was really like. I have to say, though, as a media person, I do think Pepsi did the perfect, you know, they responded to this perfectly. They pulled the ad and they have issued a statement that I think is completely appropriate.
What like, did it say? I haven't seen the reaction.
It said, you know, we were trying to do something. It has obviously failed in a huge way. We have pulled the ad. We apologize. We also apologize for putting Kendall Jenner in this position.
Hmm. Boy, only if our president would once in a while offer out words like this. I'm completely transitioning to a different topic now, but every now and then
I'll go there with you, my friend.
Every now and then you try your best. Every now and then the words fail you or even your logic fails, and then you say, yeah, we screwed up. We're playing on a big stage, and we're big enough that we can accept that and move on.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wouldn't that do a world of good for this country if our leader would say that?
Yeah, yes. Instead of doubling down over and over and over again. And, you know, I know we'll talk about my book, but I am here on a media tour and a book tour and visiting bookstores in different cities. And I will say I had an opportunity to go on the Bill O'Reilly show last month when my book first came out. And I've been on the show before. And after thinking about it for about 5 seconds, I said, I cannot accept this.
Because of the recent allegations against
him? No, not because of the recent allegations. Because of all of the allegations. This is not new.
Are we talking about Bill O'Reilly or Donald Trump here?
Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, I just segued because Donald Trump just, you know, decided to spend part of his day defending Bill O'Reilly. And that's indefensible. It's completely indefensible.
Yeah.
And what I'm trying to say is, segueing back to the Pepsi, the advertisers are pulling from Bill O'Reilly, but it's not just advertisers. There are people who won't be on a show.
Advertisers, yeah, advertisers as well, but I haven't heard of many guests making that decision.
But I mean, look, Bill O'Reilly could care less whether or not I'm on his show. It was a real opportunity for me, but what I'm trying to say is this. There comes a point where his brand, so to speak, based on his behavior, which is real, his brand is so bad that I don't want it to touch me, you know? Not to mention I don't want to be in a room alone with him. And I mean that. No, I mean that because I've been in the studio with him.
And what's his personal behavior like in
private moments like that? It's funny. Years and years ago when I first did the show, I've described this to many people as one of the strangest experiences in my life. It's a large studio with a round desk at the time. And it was set up sort of like a Charlie Rose thing, although not, there was no warmth. It was very cold. And the entire studio was dark except this pin spot over the desk. And what I remember so vividly was that he never made eye contact with me.
Hmm.
And I know he might have like a social disorder or Asperger's or whatever, but it was so noticeable. It was like a refusal to connect with me. And it was very, very strange. When the segment was over, he didn't thank me. And it went very well. I mean, he was pugilistic and I punched back. You know, it was great.
No, you're a good interview.
We were laughing. When it was over, he cast his eyes down and he never said thank you or goodbye. And a producer sort of tiptoed in and led me away. Never had an experience like that.
Wow.
Ever.
So what's the read on that? Does he have psychological issues? Has he got women issues? Is he can't be so intimate as actually looking a woman in the eye as he's talking to her?
I thought that it had to do at the time, and this was 8-9 years ago, maybe more. I thought that it had to do with just a basic inability to connect with someone. I think it's probably pretty common with other people who have met him. I also, even at the time, he had woman trouble at the time. A producer of his had just settled a case with a producer.
The number's staggering, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
the number
totally.
Is staggering.
And even at the time, I remember thinking, he is not interested, in quotes, in me. I'm roughly his age. I have nothing of interest to Bill O'Reilly. You know, I'm little, I'm brown-haired. You know, I got nothing for this guy. I don't agree with him.
Yeah, really. Well, I mean, clearly you don't agree with them, but I always thought that makes for good conversation,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
If you all are respectful, let's stop talking about Bill O'Reilly and talk about your books. So The Mighty Queens of Freeville was a biography written by you.
Well, it's a memoir.
It's a memoir.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Steve and I were kidding. Most of us would be happy if we lived a life so interesting that one book would contain it. But no, you have two books about you by you.
And you know the irony is that...
And you're not an egotist at all. So I thought, now, how do you justify that, Amy?
Okay, so I'm going to tell you. The irony and like the big inside joke about both books and really the point of these books is that I have not led a fascinating life. I have not. My life has been completely average. And by average, I say it has been full of drama, personal drama. It has been full of heartbreak, pain, loss, grief, love, laughing, all of it. And so, honestly, with this book, what I chose to do and really what I feel when I see it and when I talk about it is it's about opening up my life to my readers and to the people who write to me with their problems. And I'm not saying, oh, your problems are little. Look at me. You know, what I'm saying is, I get it. I get it. Look at me.
Well, the title of the second book is Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things, which is, of course, your sort of occupation, but maybe it's also your disposition. I wonder if you were not doing what you do, is there something about your personality or your persona that lends itself to people doing that sort of thing?
I think there is. Honestly, I think I look open.
Because Bill O'Reilly was talking to me, and he said that he's got nothing to say to you.
Yeah.
He said he's nothing there.
He is in love with me. No, I missed a flight recently. I'm on this whirlwind book tour, and I actually, at the time when you can least afford to do it, I missed a flight because somebody had engaged me in conversation. And honestly, it was my responsibility. I was so interested in what she was saying.
Really?
That I missed my flight.
Wow.
Yeah.
Boy, that's good for you that you can be that kind of a person. That's a very generous person that gives their attention when they know full well they've got a flight around the corner. You write about your second husband, who is somebody that you knew at the age of 10 or 12, right?
Yeah. Bruno and I first met. I grew up on a farm in this tiny village in upstate New York. And Bruno and I went to high school together. His family farmed about 3 miles away. And yeah, I've known him my whole life.
On and off, or had you stayed in?
No, you know, I knew him in childhood. And then here's where I don't know, this is kind of an Ask Amy situation. I knew him in childhood. He stayed home. I left. He became a builder, a contractor, a home builder, a business owner. And I moved back to my hometown to do what 4 in 10 Americans are doing, which is taking care of a family member. And I moved back home to do that, and I needed to renovate my mom's house a little bit because she was disabled. So I called old Bruno, who I had gone to high school with, who, you know, is a really good builder. And it was like falling into the cheesiest Hallmark Channel movie.
Did you have a little bit of an agenda when you called him? You could have called anybody.
I did. I had caught glimpses of Bruno over the years. And I talk about this in my book. and that zing, you know, zing, zing. Yeah, I definitely had the zing, zing. But I wasn't really aware of his situation.
How old were his situation, meaning?
He had been divorced for about 5 years.
Was he single? Was he eligible? Whatever.
Right. I wasn't quite aware if he was eligible. And once I learned that he was eligible, I called him.
Then you said, maybe could you do my other bathroom? Could you mow the lawn?
He actually declined to do this renovation. And I remember calling my best friend afterwards and saying, like, oh, my God, I would pay this guy just to come to my house. And have coffee with me.
He was, the electricity was there at least on your end, right off the bottom.
Yeah.
He's a really good looking guy, isn't he?
He's a doll.
Did you ask him to mow the lawn with his shirt off like they did him?
It did have that quality. Yeah, he's this burly guy. Yeah.
Had you had that sort of passion for somebody prior to that? Had it been a while since you sort of found that sort of love welling up in you, and was that very exciting when it happens?
John, I gotta tell you, I'm almost 60 years old, and your virginity does grow back, it turns out.
Isn't it nice to know that you can feel that again?
Yes, it had been a million years. I was single for almost 18 years, and I had not dated very much. And I really felt like this is it for me. I am going to be living with my mom, you know, the spinster forever. And this really, the good thing is this, I did sort of internet dating. I tried this and that over the years. And I felt like it had polished me up for the show. You know, when this man walked onto my porch, I was like, oh, I'm ready.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
How I wish that for people in your circumstance. I don't think so many people are so lucky to have that moment.
I know. It was
amazing.
Pretty great. Huh. And you know what? Times since our meeting and marriage have been tough. And there are times, I think any married couple, there are some times when all you've got is that wonderful zing zing memory of when you met, you know?
I didn't know the thing about matches and burning things with you.
Oh, I know.
I want to talk about that in just a second. Amy Dickinson's second book is Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things. Previously, you read her The Mighty Queens of Freeville. If you didn't, you should. You can certainly read her in newspapers. All right, we got a couple minutes left with our guest. Her name is Amy Dickinson. Her latest book is Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things. You may read the Ask Amy advice columns that she authors. And then writes books, and then travels, and then has this ordinary life. Evidently, I think it's extraordinary, but I guess when you write as well as you do. You know what? I want you to write my autobiography.
Oh, I would love to.
I don't have that much to say. I grew up in the suburbs. I will never be a jazz musician. I don't have enough pain or suffering in my life. But I'll bet you could even make somebody like me seem interesting. What was the predilection with you and matches as a child?
When I was a kid, you know, part of my story is sort of growing up in poverty. And I'm going to segue to I would eat matches when I was a kid. And I was taken to the doctor. And I think I had pica, which is this sort of it's a form of malnutrition, not because of poverty, but just because I had it. And I was craving the sulfur. So anyway, I ate matches. Until I was told to stop, and then I did. And then later in my story, I talk about burning some of my mother's possessions in my yard. This is, I know, a challenging concept for some people, but I live in the country, and people burn stuff, you know? And I faced this after my mother's death, which really, really emptied me out emotionally. I faced this issue of what to do with, not her things, but a house and a barn full of, not hoarder stuff, but like furniture. And I mean, my family has lived in the same spot for 200 years.
A life of stuff, yeah.
A life of beautiful stuff and broken stuff and in-between stuff. And this is an issue that people in my age group are dealing with. We're trying to downsize ourselves, and then we land with households full of stuff. And one of the things I decided to do was to burn. I sold things. I gave things away. I mean, I dispensed with things in a respectful way, but there were things that were broken, things that carried this emotional weight for me, and I decided to burn them. And I feel like that was like the best thing I could have done.
And not to destroy them or get rid of them, but literally burning them.
Burn them. Burning.
To destroy them right before your eyes with your own hand was cathartic somehow?
It was. I just felt so burdened by these possessions, losing them in that way, watching them go up in smoke. I felt free. And I felt more able to cope with the rest, all of the other aspects of grief and loss.
You know, my friend Thomas Jefferson burned all of his wives' letters, those great letters that they had back and forth. He said, "Well, I can't have that."
I would never burn a document or a letter, but I will definitely burn a broken plant stand. You know, definitely.
That's less dramatic. The book is terrific, and you always are too. Why aren't you doing what I do? I mean, I know you're on the radio, but do you have any desire to do a talk show on WGN Radio someday?
I would love to. I would love to. I would have to live here to do it, probably.
Yeah. Well, maybe not, but shut my mouth. I just got here, so I don't need you horning in on anybody's job, but it's always a pleasure to read and see you.
Thank you, John. I feel exactly the same way.
Get the book Strangers Tend to Tell Me Things. It's 150, almost 8 on WGN. Thank you, Steve. 208, WGN, John Williams. Lousy baseball weather, huh?
There's no way to 271, but there was a way to 306. Wasn't that an exciting one?
Lord have mercy.
Lord have mercy. Our truck talk we always reserve for the 2 o'clock hour, and not a lot of it today. We'll actually talk more about the Supreme Court vote coming up around the corner, the Kendall Jenner Pepsi ad also pops up in this hour. And yes, another story about people being microchipped, which I think is our future. When I get to be king, you will have a chip under your thumb, and it will have everything we need to know and you need to know in there, and you will thank me for it. But that's around the corner. There's one other thing I was going to mention here, Steve, before we get rolling. No, it suddenly escapes me. Andy Field joins us with ABC. Andy, it's John Williams. Welcome back to the show. How are you? Hold on. I got to put Andy there. Hi, Andy. This is John Williams. How are you?
Thank you.
I appreciate you coming on. Let's just talk about a few topics that are sort of resonating in Washington, D.C. and around the country and around the world. Where are we on the Neil Gorsuch? And by the way, do you say Gorsuch or Gorsuch? Nomination process.
Gorsuch. I've heard it pronounced in the hearing Gorsuch, so that's what I've been saying, but I could be wrong.
No, I think I'm going to go with Gorsuch. So how are things on that? Is it what happens next now?
Well, we are barreling toward an earthquake here in the Senate. This happened before, back in 2013. When the Senate Republicans in charge basically blocked virtually every nomination that President Obama wanted to get, either into the executive branch or into the lower courts, to the point where Harry Reid just said, you know, I've had enough. You guys can't block everything here. And the Democrats had the majority in the Senate at that point, and he said, we're going to have a vote to change the rules, and they did. And so all those presidential nominees and lower court judges could no longer be filibustered. You could no longer have to say you need 60 votes to get someone through the Senate. They did not do that with a Supreme Court justice. And it looks, by all accounts, that the Republicans are going to do that tomorrow. The Democrats are going to filibuster. They're going to have to say we need 60 votes to move this thing forward. And then the Republicans, very likely, will change the rules forever in the Senate, and that's really going to change history in this country, because that whole filibuster was supposed to be in place so that we could make sure the tyranny of the majority didn't overrule or step all over the minority party here in Washington. So if this happens, then forever forward, because I can't imagine it changing back the other way, whoever has the majority party in the Senate will literally control pretty much everything.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you if they'd ever rewrite the rules, but the party in power will never want to do that, so it'll never happen.
No, and John McCain, Senator Republican from Arizona, just gave a pretty impassioned speech saying he was very angry when the Democrats did this back in 2013, and he said he is torn. He doesn't think that it's a good idea to rewrite the rules tomorrow to override the Democratic filibuster, because that means it's always going to be bad for the minority party, and that's not the way the Senate works. And he says, but at the same time, he doesn't have any choice because he doesn't want to block a qualified nominee and have a full complement of justices on the Supreme Court. So he says he is going to vote to override that rule, and if you're a betting man, this is going to happen tomorrow around 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
none of this is boomeranging around on the Democrats. That is, if we all think, gee, as you said, the tyranny of the majority is too tenuous sometimes, we shouldn't allow this to happen. Well, then maybe the Democrats should all stop in pretty much as a block from blocking his nomination. They wouldn't need to do this if the Democrats would recognize that he's a qualified candidate.
Well, that's true, although many Democrats say he's not, and they bring up very specific cases. And the fact that President Trump vowed to have someone who would pass a litmus test, a very conservative litmus test that would promise to overturn Roe versus Wade, although Neil Gorsuch didn't say that in the hearings. He actually didn't say much in the hearings. He was very careful about that. But the bigger issue here is that the Democrats are doing this not because of Neil Gorsuch, but because of what Republicans did last year. In an unprecedented move with Merrick Garland, who was President Obama's pick, to not even give him a hearing. And that had never happened in the U.S. Senate before either.
Well, what do you think would happen to Tammy Duckworth or Dick Durbin here if they voted for him? Because they just thought that while we are politically different, of course we're politically different, he seems to be qualified. I wonder how much hell they would have to pay in Illinois if that would cost them in some way.
Well, I don't know Illinois politics as well as you do, but Tammy Duckworth is a very popular senator back there, as well as Dick Durbin. So I'm not sure that they would pay a very big political price unless, you know, some other Democrat came against them. Certainly, a Republican wouldn't fault them for doing that, and certainly couldn't use it as an edge to vote against them.
Yeah, interesting point. So talk to me a little bit about President Trump's decision to take Steve Bannon from the National Security Council's Principles Committee. What do we read into that?
Well, and this is a joke going around town here, is that the Kremlinology, this is back in the 60s and 70s, Kremlinology was people trying to read the tea leaves on what was happening in the Kremlin,
yeah,
because you never really got any information out. Well, they're kind of doing that here in Washington now, because Steve Bannon has literally been by the president's side at every press conference, at every event, and it was unusual that he was on the National Security Council. He's been taken off, and the reasoning we're given by the White House is that he's got too many other things to do. But that doesn't seem to apply to Jared Kushner and some other people in the White House. Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, is basically in charge of almost everything in the White House, at least when we look at his portfolio.
Oh, yeah. If you follow Stephen Colbert, he's been updating Jared's list of responsibilities.
He's very funny. He's just been blistering this week.
And it's comical. Last night and the night before, he was, you're right, very funny, very cutting, very blistering. But he's right. It's sort of silly to say you're in charge of Middle East peace, you're in charge of China. I think he might have to build the wall. There's just all
he's doing that on Sunday on his day off.
I'm telling you. And then, by the way, he's got a wife and kids that maybe, of course, all of that, you know, you sort of have to tell them you're number two right now because the country is number one. But it's ridiculous the number of responsibilities that Jared Kushner has these days.
But getting back to Steve Bannon, what's interesting is that the news conference with the King of Jordan today, Steve Bannon was nowhere to be found. And that is a first for the president since he's been in office. Now, I don't know that you read anything into that, but certainly that was a curious event.
Right. But then we're suggesting that there's more to this than just that he has too much to do. In fact, what could be more important than maybe that as a responsibility? I can't imagine that the president is finally listening to people and saying it's inappropriate to have that political a creature at the table. I wonder what else is going on here.
We don't know. And then, of course, there was the other bizarre statement today about Susan Rice, the former National Security Advisor for President Obama, and the whole guy. There are so many swirling controversies here that it's literally hard for listeners to keep up. So we might want to give a primer here. But Susan Rice apparently had gotten some information when she was looking into Russian spying on the United States and involvement in the elections last fall. She saw some things that looked curious to her. She says, okay, I need you to tell me who the Americans are at this thing, that their names were masked in these tapped phone calls that were really tapping foreign people, not Americans. They just happened to be caught in this. Turned out to be some people who work for Donald Trump. Donald Trump's claiming, oh, she's committed a crime here. This proves that they were wiretapping us. It proves neither, because she would have never known anything was happening with any of Donald Trump's folks unless they unmasked those people. So they weren't deliberately tapping them. That's number one. Number two, the president today said she may have committed a crime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
With zero evidence of that. This is another case where the president is doing, you know, making this outlandish claim, just as he did with saying President Obama had wiretapped him, without providing any evidence that actually is the case. And this is really extraordinary for a sitting president to do.
Well, maybe he put quotes around the word crime, because we now know the wiretap doesn't mean wiretap. It simply means surveillance.
And, it's possible.
And, listen, I'm not making this up. I'll bet you the spin on this is going to be, well, that's a crime. That's almost a sort of general statement we make when we say, I don't like that which happened.
You mean like you didn't finish your dinner, that's a crime?
Exactly. Are you kidding
okay,
me? That, that ref's call in the third quarter, that's a crime what they did to my team. That's what he meant by that. Can you tell me the other funny thing? We played it in the open, just a clip of it, but he's at a speech last night referencing the Electoral College and the vote and how he won the election. I don't know why he continues to bring that up.
There doesn't seem to be a speech where he doesn't mention this here, and I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but...
Well, you'd better be. You better go get that degree, Andy.
I'm going to go off to get the master's degree here to read the tea leaves. But those people who are psychologists and psychiatrists say that this really points to someone who has this inferiority complex about his electoral win and the fact that he lost by 3 million popular votes and won the Electoral College and has to keep saying that over and over again, because he is the first president in U.S. history to win the Electoral College and at the same time lose by the largest margin in the popular vote in history.
Oh, and I've never put it that way, because we know plenty of people, a few instances where you won the electoral.
Well, Al Gore is one of them.
Sure. But his margin was greater in popular loss than Bush's was. Yeah.
Correct.
Interesting. Wow. Well, there's an interesting metric. I hadn't heard that one, Andy. We sure appreciate your time.
Believe me, I'm not a math major, but I figured that one out on my calculator.
Well done, sir. I will visit with you again.
All right, thanks for having me.
You bet. Andy Field from ABC News. It's 2:20 on WGN, so there's just another way to put it. I think we all see that thing about him bringing up the election for what it is. And you don't have to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist or a political reporter. He's insecure about the margin of his victory. That is, he didn't have as many popular votes as Hillary, and the electoral margin wasn't a great, historically speaking, electoral margin. To convince himself that he's legit, he keeps saying it. But he's never going to persuade anybody, because the facts just aren't there. But the reason I played it in the open, too, was that it's odd that he's still making that a conversation. We've all moved on. I don't have to be talking about that now, but the president of the United States spent several minutes doing it last night.
He tweeted on Monday that Hillary Clinton got the quote-unquote answers to a debate, and it was a primary debate.
It was a long time ago.
It was against Bernie Sanders.
And by the way, if you look exactly into that, Donna Brazile, right? Is that who we're talking about?
Yeah, right.
She shouldn't have done what she'd done, but it is not at all what he's characterizing it to be. What? And if you're saying, John, whatever, move on, don't tell me. Tell the leader of the free world. It's a 2:21. All right, so now they're going to chip you, literally. And I think this is a terrific idea in a minute.
You do not.
Oh, I 100% do.
Really? You want to be chipped?
As a convenience. Here's the story, Steve. It says there's a company at the Swedish Startup Hub Epicenter. Swedish Startup Hub. So it sounds like one of these incubators like we have in Chicago. And this one's called Epicenter. The company offers to implant its workers and startup members with microchips the size of grains of rice. They function as swipe cards to open doors, operate printers, buy smoothies with a wave of the hand. The biggest benefit, I think, is convenience, said the co-founder and chief executive of Epicenter. As a demonstration, he unlocks a door merely by waving near it. It basically replaces a lot of things you have, he said. Other communication devices, whether it be credit cards or keys. I got out of my powerful Mach 5 today and walked halfway up to the through the loading dock to the door here at WGN Radio at the Tribune Tower. And I thought, oh, where is my plastic card that we use to open doors around here? I won't be able to get in. And so then I thought, so then I do the thing where you hit your pockets, and I hit them, and it wasn't there. And then you know what you do when you do that. You hit them again, because if you hit them enough, you might actually generate the thing you're missing. But that didn't work this time. So then I check my neck. You do the slap the chest. Is it on a lanyard around my neck? Perhaps you've looked for your glasses by feeling your hair.
When's the last time you wore a lanyard?
I don't, because I don't like the look.
Right.
So.
And still you're hoping there might be one there.
Right. I know. What if I mistakenly did it? Look, I'm already screwed up here, so maybe I screwed up and put it around my neck. So then I think, all right, it's not there. So then I do the whole thing again. I'm not sure if this isn't something I need to have checked. Then I went to the car, and I thought, well, I just got out of the car. It's in the car. It wasn't there. I thought, well, then it's got to be in my bags. And I had two bags that I was carrying. And I knew it wasn't in the one, so I looked in the other, and it wasn't there. Yeah. Then I saw a guy walking into the Tribune Tower through the loading dock who works here and has one of those holy grails. So I just pretended like we were a couple of old buds, and as he walked in the building, I just slipped in with him. Technically, I'm here illegally right now.
Hey, I just moved into 2E. I don't know if you haven't recognized me yet, but you just let me in.
He didn't even know. He thought I was legit. You know how you do that beep? And then I was supposed to do beep. We only had one beep, and I just slid in with him.
You didn't make the noise, did you?
And then when I got into my office, I realized that it was, in fact, in one of my two bags. The one bag I didn't check because I knew it wasn't in there. Why am I taking all this time to tell you this story? Because I would not have had that problem if I had been chipped with a microchip the size of a grain of rice under my thumb. I'm always doing this, but I could just go boop, and the door would have opened. Think of the amount of convenience it would be. And it's not just physical things like, where is my fob, where is my key card? It's, what is my password for the Walgreens photo thing that I use? What is my password for that other account that we never go to? Now we still have different numbers and passwords. This is the best idea ever. And then you just have it all embedded in a chip. Steve, your witness.
Yeah, well, and then think of the CEO who wants to know where John Williams is right at this moment. And, oh, I can track him. Look, well, John shouldn't be there. What's he doing there?
In the women's room. Well, I think that you can have that thing. I mean, you could set the parameters for
it. Oh, yeah. You can depend on people's goodwill. That would never be violated.
Tell you what, I would be willing to trade them knowing if I'm in the women's room.
Again.
And by the way, I'm like hardly ever there.
Has it been a long time?
I would be willing to trade them being able to know things about me for the convenience. Because you know what's going to happen? If they were tracking me today, they would go, wow, John is walking back and forth in the parking lot in a cold rain.
Make a note, see mental health specialist.
So, right? If they had chipped him, if they had allowed him that convenient chip, he would have been productive by now. He would have been prepping his show. Instead of walking back and forth looking for something that is, in fact, on his person.
Why can't they do it with your eyeballs or something?
They could do that, too. I'm not a big fan of the retinal implants, but I suppose they could do that sort of thing, put something in there.
Then they couldn't track you.
I'm not real worried about the tracking, Steve. No. You got to get over that.
You know me. I'm not usually worried about it, but if it's something in me the whole time.
Seriously, you don't think I'm not onto something here with a little chip under your skin?
I get what you're saying.
It would make you a more honest citizen.
I don't think you could make John a more honest citizen.
Wait a minute. Let's let Elif expand on that. What is your point?
Well, if your CEO knew where you were at all times, you wouldn't be able to escape.
How about escape? Boy, that was Freudian. You're not helping our cause.
John and I come here willingly. Why do you come here?
Escape?
No, I didn't mean it as a double entendre. Just escape. Well, metaphorically.
From your work responsibilities for that time. You wouldn't be able to buzz over to Starbucks, and I wouldn't do that because I know that they would be tracking me. This is not the kind of tracking I'm interested in. I'm more interested in just a device under your skin which would make your life more convenient. I'm now writing out of this possibility, Steve, any GPS tracking.
Right. So you want it like a force shield around your finger, where only it comes out of your finger. No, I'm with you.
You're
here.
You're mocking me.
No, I'm not. So it can't be. So the signal goes no further than your fingertip. right?
That's sure. Right.
So you
touch
very
low
it.
Frequency thing. Yeah. Right. Just, I'm not even sure there has to be a frequency.
The radiation involved would be very low.
All right, Steve's going to do the news, and then afterwards, one more topic on the show today, and that is the Pepsi ad, which Pepsi no longer has as an ad. You can watch the full video on YouTube, and we've put it on my Facebook page. I'm King John there. It's 2:30 on WGN. Thank you, Steve. 2:39. I'm John Williams. This is WGN.
Some said never, but they never done come. Yeah, and took our trust. It's been winning, but the lovers ain't done. Yeah, not on my watch.
Just gonna play a little bit
of
this.
My rights away.
This is Skip Marley. That's Bob Marley's grandson, right? And this is the backdrop. This is the music in that Pepsi ad, which you can still see in its 2 full minutes of glory. They call it actually an ad posted on YouTube.
Did they
call it a... No, there's more than just describing it as an ad, a little movie, 2-minute movie. But in it, you see a musician... And you also see Kendall Jenner, and as he's creating his music or she's doing a glamorous photo shoot, going by them at separate locations is this Black Lives Matter-inspired protest. And as the people go through the streets protesting, both of them sort of pause and think, I should be part of that movement. And so one by one, the two of them join the movement, or at least they march with these people. And then she gets with the marchers to a place where the police have sort of stopped them, and there's a wall of cops. You've seen this scene before. And then a gap, and then there's the protesters themselves. And Kendall Jenner has an ice-cold Pepsi, and she walks across the gap, the protesters to the cops, and hands the police officer a can of Pepsi. And this is the most exciting thing the protesters have ever seen. They can't believe it. They're jumping up and down and cheering because he pops it open and takes a sip, and doggone it, that was good. And then everybody's happy now. You know, if you're a protester or a police officer, we've got issues to solve here, but you should have a case of Pepsi. The other side will just love you for it. And then the police officer, after he takes a sip of the soda, he looks at the other cops and he's like, hey. That's what he does. He gives that look. I'm not sure exactly what that means. Like, hey, this soda's pretty good. Have you ever heard of it? It's called Pepsi. Pepsi. I don't know what this is, but it's amazing. Or maybe the look means, hey, these kids whose heads we're about to bash in on the other side of the gap, they're not so bad after all. They just gave me a soda. It means one of those two things. And then the ad ends. We posted that on my Facebook page. I'm King John there. We asked you to comment on it. Maya said, people need to quit being so offended by everything. It's a commercial. Get over it. Leslie said, it's terrible. And Chris said, what am I missing? I guess what you're missing is this sort of trivialization of what Black Lives Matter is about, or about protest marches, which are so volatile these days. The idea that, let's just make a commercial, sell soda, and if we'd all just have a soda, the world would be better is preposterous. I'm telling you, that's why they pulled the ad. In fact, the company said this in a statement today. Pepsi was trying to project a global message of unity, peace, and understanding. Clearly, we missed the mark, and we apologize. We did not intend to make light of any serious issue. We are pulling the content and halting any further rollout. We also apologize for putting Kendall Jenner in this position. The short film, there it is. The short film, 2 minutes, very short film. Was released yesterday, in which, here's the description of it from TVLine.com. Jenner joins/leads a large group of young protesters, resulting in a police standoff that can only be de-escalated by the power of Pepsi. And I'm wondering what you think about that. Now, this conversation goes best if you've seen the ad. My number's 312-981-7200. But even with that description, I just wonder what you make of it. You know, I'm not as bent out of shape about this as some people are. I know their intention was good, and I think that's a starting point. And if they miss the mark, okay, Pepsi's not stupid, and they're not insensitive or ignorant about the issues in the world. It was just an ad. And yeah, it's trying to sell soda, but it's also trying to do a unifying thing. And some companies do that these days. Remember the Super Bowl ads? Some of them very specifically went after the wall issue and who's going to build it and are we going to let those people across? And they don't need to do that to sell hardware, but some of them do. I don't know that they necessarily should, but if they do and they fail, I don't think we need to beat them up because they tried, particularly since they said, okay, we got it wrong. We got it wrong. What's your thought about it? Stephen, you go first. You're on WGN. Hi, Steve. What's your thought?
Well, I watched the video about five times because I wanted to make an educated comment. I heard everybody talking about it, you know, how negative it is. They were so upset about it. People need to look at the video and actually dissect it a little bit and just pay attention to the little things that are in there. Number one, it's not a Black Lives Matter protest or anything like that. Actually, it's a peaceful demonstration. They're promoting peace. There's peace signs all over the place. There is a join the conversation signs all over the place. Everybody, if you notice, all the people are smiling and they're laughing. They're interacting with multiple different races.
I know you. When I saw the ad, I thought, why are these people protesting? They seem to be the happiest bunch of people.
Right, and they're protesting because they want more peace in the world. They want everybody just to come together and live together as one body, and that's what Pepsi is trying to come across with. And they're saying, listen, you know, everybody matters, and no matter what your race is, so just, you know what, have a Pepsi and just relax. You know, and now the cops there, they're just there like any other protest would be. They're there to keep the peace, and that's all it was. So it wasn't a conflict or anything with the protesters. And now the Kendall Jenner thing is she was doing her photo shoot, and if you pay attention to it, she catches the protest coming by. She's kind of interested a little bit. She's like, well, what's going on? What's going on? But yet she's still doing her photo shoot,
yeah.
Yeah, and then...
But then she rips her wig off, wipes her glamorous lipstick off, and says, no, I'm going to be with these people.
Right, and before that, she did that a couple times where she's like, oh, what's going on? What's going on? And even the violinist did the same thing. He heard it, checked out the window, and he's like, you know what? I'm going to join this. Well, the violinist invited Kendall to come over. He gave her the little wink. He's like, come on over and join us, you know? And so she's like, you know what? I'm going to do it. That's when she ripped off her wig and smeared her lipstick off and stuff like that. Now she's part of the protest. Now she's like, okay, I'm feeling this great vibe and this energy, right? Now all the other people were like, they were all excited because, well, this is Kendall Jenner. She doesn't have to do this.
Yeah, I was confused by that. In this ad, she's clearly Kendall Jenner, right? They're pretty stoked that she's there. It's not just her being some generic model.
Right, because this is
okay, hold on, Steve. So your point is that we're making way too much out of this. There's nothing wrong about this ad, right?
No, not at all. This is a great ad. This should be praised. This should be like, hey, Pepsi's really going out on a limb and trying to, and I don't think Pepsi should have pulled that ad.
Yeah, that's funny because when you do, that's sending a message as well. You know, it gets a little complicated then because you say, okay, well, then we don't endorse that message. We're now pulling back, and you don't want to have to pull away from something you see as very positive. Steve, I'm going to let you go. I really appreciate your attention to the ad and calling in. From Stephen, we go to Tom. You're on WGN. What's your thought, Tom?
Hi, John. Before I get into this, I want you to know that the kingdom of your serfs missed you yesterday. Hopefully everything is okay.
That's nice of you to say. All is well. Thank you.
Yes. The lady, the CEO, chairman of the board, president of the Pepsi Corporation, is a take-no-prisoners first or second generation Indian American, and that really surprises me that she would.
Oh yeah.
And
by the way, we didn't mention this, if I may, Tom, but there is in that ad as well the moment where Kendall exchanges the soda and the gesture with the police officer is captured by a woman who's wearing a hijab. She's looks Somali or something like that. So we've got that element written in there too. That moment of unity is captured by one of the people who is being quite marginalized these days. It's a very interesting kind of ad.
I would hope that she would be interviewed as to her reasoning to allow this to be pulled off. Because is it Pepsi or Coke that had We like to make the world.
I was doing the thing. Now I got to sing the whole thing before I know. Steve, I'd like to teach
That's
the
Coke.
World. To, let me do it. The oh. world to sing in perfect harmony. Grow apple trees and honeybees and
still Coke.
Snow White turtle doves. Coke. It's the real thing. Coke is. It's a Coke commercial.
Well, maybe irrespective. It just that's what I brought that back to my.
Oh yeah, it totally sounds
Michael,
like that.
And,
yeah.
Michael, and Michael Jackson's video, Black and White. If you remember that one, where the faces kept changing.
Sure, I can sing that for you. Hey, Steve, watch this.
It's black. It's white.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting point, though. To me, it had that very same vibe, Tom. It was just trying to put some positive juju in the world, and it failed. But I don't think it failed as bad as everybody is out to judge them for. Thanks for the call. Are we taking line three? Do we have time for that call? Let's pause here. You can get in as well. 249 on WGN. 253. WGN, John Williams here. Similar vibe, similar feel. I can see why the previous caller said black and white reminds him of the Coke ad, which reminds him of the Pepsi ad. They're all just trying to say something positive in the world, like let's all come together. Why do we beat ourselves up anytime somebody wants to try and do good? No good deed goes unpunished, right? I'll bet you the Pepsi CEO, though, and remember Pepsi pulled it, and I'm sure she had her hand in this decision. I'll bet you she didn't even know about the ad until it dropped, until the controversy erupted. Do you think that the CEO of a company like Pepsi is clued in on every television commercial that comes out? Even one like this that might, you know, borrow from current events, and that's always kind of a dangerous place to go. I know that it's not a Black Lives Matter rally that they're depicting in there, but it's likened to that. It's akin to that. It's the images that you've seen. And so I don't blame people for saying, oh, it's like a Black Lives Matter rally. And you can say, no, it wasn't. But yeah, it kind of was. But I wonder if she even knew that that ad was going to go out. I'll bet she was just clicking around. She gets up in the morning. You know, those executives, they get up like at 4. They get up when Donald Trump is tweeting. They're up early. And then she's just clicking around going, hey, here's something about Pepsi. Well, I'm the CEO. I'll just click open. Oh, no. Wow. Are we in trouble? Her name is Indira Krishnamurthy Nuyi, an American business executive and current chairperson, chief executive officer, second largest food and beverage business in the world. According to Wiki, born October 28, 1955, she, at the age of 61, is worth $144 million. She made $30 million from Pepsi last year. She's a Yale School of Management graduate in 1980. So that's the who she is. And somebody said, yeah, I'm surprised she let that pass. Hey, Donald, you're on the air. What did you want to say? Hi.
Yes, hello. You know, I was going to say the same thing that you basically sung the jingle to. And, you know, but if I can add to that, Mr. Williams, it's like this. You know, a word is nothing but a word unless you make it mean something. And if we, and whether it be a situation or whether it be an organization, you know, I mean, we as a society has to come together at all shape, forms, and sizes. I mean, I remember you raising money for tornado victims. Yep. I mean, we come together in so many different ways. I even remember them reporting back on 9/11 that there was hardly no crime, if any at all, because even the gang members was getting along. Everybody was unifying. Well, it shouldn't take tragedy to do that, Mr. Williams. But we gotta forget what the meaning of a word. We gotta quit putting meaning to words. Just like the color black and white. You know, we wouldn't have racism if we wouldn't put color to anything. Hmm. And I'm from Alabama, and I don't have a racist bone in my body. So.
Wait, you're calling from Alabama, or are you from Alabama?
No, I'm from Alabama. I live in Illinois now.
Yeah. You know, I think you make a nice point there, Donald. I'm out of time this afternoon, but thanks for calling and join us again. Okay.
You have a good day, my lord.
Yeah. You have a good day, my... Did he just call me my lord? Is that what he just said? It wasn't that nice. Hey, Judy, are you keeping score over there? One guy referenced me as being king someday, and this guy just called me my lord. which I believe is kind of a Regal reference. I'm not exactly sure, but listen, I'm not king yet. I want to be someday because I think I'd be a dandy one.
Wait, did he call you king?
He said, my lord. Me lord, which is kind of swell.
Well, you've been promoting that for years.
I have
now
always,
you're like shocked that people are actually using it.
I want the record to show that I said when I get to be king someday.
I would like you to start calling me your highness right now. Because I'm the queen.
It's 2:57. It's 3 o'clock. So, Ro, I don't have a lot of time to make fun of your colleague here.
I sat next to John for a Cavalia last night.
Oh, yes.
And he says I'm a talker. I talked during
no
the show.
I had no idea. You don't know something about somebody until you're in a situation like that.
I was reacting to different, like, oh, wow. Oh, my gosh.
Are you a screen talker?
No. I mean, when you're watching movies and things like that? No. See, I make fun of my mom because she's like,
look
worst.
Out, Kevin Hart!
That's what my
look
mom
out,
does.
Kevin Hart! My guy's got a gun, Kevin Hart!
My mom's like, no, don't go in there. No.
You were doing that last
was
night
I
with
doing
the horses,
that? I can't even help it. See, I'm turning into my mom. That's Oh, gosh.
Oh, don't say that out loud. All right.
I'm sorry.
I love your mom, but don't, but you know, this is it, right? This is not this is never what the husband wants to hear.
That's the most horrifying thing in the world. I'm not speaking about you
oh,
or your
me
mom.
Talking? Oh.
My dad and I. And Brenda will just give me that look. And no words are spoken. I go, oh, no.
Yes, you said that. And
another
he
layer.
Would say that.
Oh, no.